There, Lord Brahma had said, "My dear son Kardama, since you have completely accepted my instruction without duplicity, showing the proper respect, you have worshipped me properly. Whatever instructions you took from me, you have carried out, and thereby you have honored me." That verse describes how one should accept the order of a superior and the pingul, the non-duplicitous, submissive, non-cheating mood by which one accepts a order. And here what's being emphasized is that it should be done unhesitatingly. Interesting thing to talk about, and let's discuss just that, this relationship between disciple and guru. Guru here is obviously in the plural, since the father is being referred to. Lord Brahma being in such a position that he was the father of Kardamani. And when I read the purport that he followed, Srila Prabhupada equated the two. But the equation was that the guru is as good as the father. Not that the father is as good as the guru, but the guru is as good as the father, which explains, or at least illuminates, the high esteem that a father holds in Vedic culture or Krishna consciousness. And of course, when we're talking about father, same goes for mother. These are all generic terms. In the way that we talk about father, it actually refers to other senior members of family, superiors, brahmanas, the king. Ultimately, he's also father, the king's wife, who's considered to be mother. Of these things, the principle of obedience should be there. When Kunti Devi made a really unevaluated comment, Draupadi was in love with Arjuna, and Krishna had recommended to her that she should marry him. And of course, Krishna and Arjuna Pandavas came, were in Vedanta at that time, and they came, and Arjuna, anyway, you know that story. He pierced the eye of the fish, he won Draupadi's hand, they came back at night while their mother was cooking, and so from behind they said, "Just see what we want. Well, whatever it is, we share amongst you." She said it. Just because she said it, it had to be obeyed. So when we're talking about father or guru, the principle was the same for the mother. This is not something that's known or practiced in the present day. When one of our leaders, Srila Prabhupada's servants, was making this point to Srila Prabhupada, that Srila Prabhupada, when it says that we should treat all women like mother in our present culture, it doesn't mean much to the general person because no one treats their mother respectfully. And Srila Prabhupada said, "Well, you learned it." In other words, you learned how to treat your mother with respect, and then you similarly learned how to treat other women with equal respect as you would with your mother. And that was 50 years ago, over 50 years ago. So what's going on with the present day man? A completely different type of behavior. So this type of extraordinary respect is what characterizes Vaishnava culture. And this type of respect for superiors is one aspect of showing respect to others, and in different ways, but also equally intense in their own way, is how honor and respect is shown to equals, to inferiors, to sons. Because what to speak of Vedic culture, Krishna consciousness, is a culture of showing love and affection for others and respecting everyone's position. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu connects the ability to practice Krishna consciousness with the ability to actually relate to others. Srimad Bhagavatam also defines Vaishnava. The truth is a Vaishnava. Vaishnava is someone prema, maitri, bhopiksha, yathoti, samajama. And the other person who is not dhatchanyeshu, bhakteshu, who doesn't really know how to relate to Vaishnavas, he actually falls into the category of Vaishnavas. He's a shadow. Shadow means you're not the real thing. So unless one actually knows how to, and if you're a shadow of the real thing, then what you're practicing in the name of Krishna consciousness, whether it's chanting Hare Krishna or studying Shastra, is all also a vas. So respect, I'm not the perfect, actually, or Sridharana Maharaj, is the acharya, training others how to show respect and love for Vaishnavas. This concept of actually showing respect to others is then therefore the very foundation of Krishna consciousness. It's the foundation for Kirtani and Shadahari, for chanting Hare Krishna. If you want to chant Hare Krishna without offense, then you can't do so until this whole principle is in place. So here, the father is placed, the guru is placed in the same part with the father. It's an interesting statement that Srila Prabhupada said. The other thing which is very interesting, and I don't know if it's mentioned anywhere, but it's worth taking a note, Srila Prabhupada said that sometimes the father can be guru. I remember some years back when one of the devotees asked me just this very question, can a father initiate this? Thakur Bhaktivinoda was actually seen as the spiritual master of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He saw him in that way. Different type of relationships, perhaps, by some of the other sons of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who would refer to Bhaktivinoda as father. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur considered him as guru. He had a different approach. But still, he was not the Diksha guru. Another question someone asked is, did a man initiate his own wife? That would also, everything is possible, but it would require research here. Srila Prabhupada implies that yes, automatically the father is the guru because he is giving birth. Srila Prabhupada points out he's giving birth, he's giving education, he's training, he's taking responsibility. These are all characteristics of the guru. So here, when we hear the other word guru, the guru is as good as the father, then we should see it in a broader sense, in the broad sense that Vedic culture actually represents, that it will not necessarily refer to just a dictionary. Anyone who teaches you, who takes responsibility, from whom you receive something very gyakket van, unatva van, eva moha, mandala. Someone who is receiving transcendental knowledge, divya, jnana, vidya, bhagavad-gita, who's actually illuminating with a real transcendental knowledge, that person should be respected as guru. And who's guru? It's a very important topic, because often we like to have tact definitions of guru. And once again, not the chanye shu bhakte shu. The duty or the responsibility of a Vaishnava is to be able to recognize who the spiritual master is. Spiritual master may be appointed, but you know that, or he said, you should accept Bhakti's Gorkhashoda's Babaji as your spiritual master. This was an appointment. Although Bhaktivinoda Thakur was himself certainly in a suitable position to also be the Diksha Guru of Bhakti Sarasvati. But still, Bhakti Sarasvati Thakur, he was not an illusion that he's my father, so he's not my guru. He also respected him as guru. And equally to Gorkhashoda's Babaji, and the relationship was in that sense very, very intense. When they lived here together in Gokuma, then you see Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his quarters there in a small room where Bhaktivinoda Thakur would serve his father. And he served him in that capacity. So guru needs to be recognized and be respected. He should not be minimized in any way. Acharyama, Vijayanima, Nama, Vanyika, Prabhupada. So this concept of actually ignoring or minimizing spiritual master that will take place amongst neophyte Vaishnavas who don't know how to relate. And for that reason, Srimad Bhagavatam, or Srila Prabhupada in his prayer, Srimad Bhagavatam very early on instructs Vaishnavas that they should be very careful to come quickly to the platform of an intermediate Vaishnava so that they can cultivate the devotional service properly. So those devotees who show us the path of Krishna consciousness, Bharatma production, they're shedding light on the path of devotional service. Those devotees who are giving us advice, shiksha, those devotees who are training us, or even those devotees from whom we just hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Shravana, Guru, they're all in the category of guru. Therefore, respect should be offered to them. And then the previous verse says, how do you offer respect? How do you properly worship the spiritual master? Yes, we do Guru Puja. But that Guru Puja is the external formulation of something that takes place here. That we accept, previous verse says, completely accept instruction without duplicity. That means we accept whatever they say. And without duplicity, that's a very interesting statement. It means that someone may be accepting instruction with duplicity. What does it mean to be duplicitous when you accept the instruction of your Diksha Guru, or your PDC, or your temple president, or senior Vaishnava, or your father? Taking instructions is something that is presented in context. Senior devotees may be giving us many different types of instructions at different times. When instructions are selected, when they're meant to fulfill some ulterior purpose that I have, then that's multiplicity. And Srimad Bhagavatam says, Dharma, Vajita, Kaitava, Mahatma, that here in Bhagavad Dharma, we throw out this type of duplicity. So, and then there are obviously two types of teachings here. The teaching or the instruction, the pakya, is very specific. You do this. Krishna gives both types of teachings in the Bhagavad Gita. He gives general instructions, jnana, karma, Bhakti. And then he said, Yasya, now you fight. So then he's also giving a very specific instruction. The one is the education and the training in Krishna consciousness, the understanding of philosophy, of theology, what the Siddhanta, that these things are based upon, and then some practical application in life. Arjuna is meant to be surrendered. The principle is to be surrendered. But what does surrender mean for Arjuna? Surrender means, alright, you fight. But, if you see, you consider what I've said, and ultimately I'm not going to force you. The decision is up to you. If you don't want to fight, that's alright. But if you want to be perfect, if you want to properly worship the instructions that I've given, and ultimately Arjuna started with this whole foundation. He says, so you instruct me, you take a position of guru. So at that point, when one actually submits oneself in this way, then there's no backing out. Now here, when this statement Srila Prabhupada said, yes sir, what does it mean? Spiritual master says, do this, and you say yes sir without thinking. If you see it in the larger context of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna said, yes, sir. Parishri Vachanam Prabhu, I'll do what you say. But he also had a lot of questions. So he posed these questions to Krishna. Yes, sir meant that after you inquire and your reasonable doubts are satisfied, and when it's very clear, there's this very nice lecture by Srila Prabhupada, and he's talking about Arjuna's psychology in hearing Krishna's instruction. And Prabhupada said, Arjuna's thinking like this, he says, my friend is so stubborn. He wants me to fight. No matter what I'm telling him, he still keeps wanting to fight. So I have to do what he wants. This is very, very nice, illuminating approach to Arjuna's way of thinking, because in one sense Arjuna's way of thinking is as relevant to us as Krishna's. Krishna's guru, we're trying to follow in Arjuna's footsteps to become the perfect disciple. So he said yes sir, but he said yes sir after his nastomas. Now all of my illusions is dispelled. I have no more doubts. So a Vaishnava does have the right to do this. He has a right to ask with the proper move, with the proper attitude, with the proper gestures. He has a right to respond and ask his spiritual master, can you please tell me? I don't understand this. But ultimately, when he says, no, you should do this, then, all right. We don't necessarily have that prerogative to think, oh, my guru is very stubborn, but I'll do whatever he wants. Somehow with the right attitude, we say, all right, whatever you want, then I will accept. And something to be also kept in mind is here, the issue is very simple. There's one guru who's also the father, Brahma. So it's very easy for Arjuna Muni, he knows, I know what I'm supposed to do because it's been verbalized and there's no contradicting instruction. We find ourselves sometimes in a different situation. We're in a situation when we're in cities, we work in the association of many Vaishnavas. These Vaishnavas give us levels of instruction, sometimes they give us contradicting instruction, and still we have to say yes sir. But then as Arjuna we need to be able to also reflect, and we need to be able to know, how is it that I'm doing justice to the instructions that I'm receiving from all of my spiritual masters? The extreme example of this yes sir is that of Parashara Muni, which we should not think that we're in a position of accepting instructions from our guru with this type of immediate yes sir, and you read the pastime. Prashram Muni's father, I'm not going to go into it, that told his son, cut your mother's head off. And he said, yes, sir. He didn't even think twice. We should not think, but we should ask questions. If our guru gives us this particular instruction or this level of instruction, we should take a position of our guru. Could you please clarify what you mean by that? And when it came to a similar instruction, Arjuna had taken a vow. Of course, this wasn't instruction from the guru, but it was then later confirmed. Arjuna took a vow. I will place the head of Ashwatthama at Draupadi's feet. But then later on, Draupadi said no. Yudhisthira Maharaj said no. Krishna at first said yes, and then he said no. And Bhima was very adamant. You have to do it. He killed our son. So then he did it. But he didn't. He did it in a way that satisfied everyone. And that's real intelligence. He put the jewel off of Ashwatthama's head, which was the source of his strength, the source of his prowess, and he placed that at Draupadi's feet, so to speak. So here's another instruction. Arjuna then said, yes, sir, but he had to really think about how am I going to do justice, not just to my instruction, not just to Krishna's instruction, but to me. He's also superior. He's my older brother. I have to also satisfy him. So there's also a methodology to this, yes, sir. But ultimately, when our authority is adamant, then we have to both be obedient and we have to be intelligent. Sometimes being obedient is easier than being intelligent. And being obedient in an intelligent way, Kirtaniya Shadabhari, it requires chanting Hare Krishna very nicely. So Srila Prabhupada makes reference, I don't know how many hundreds of times Prabhupada makes reference to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport, to Bhagavad Gita, that this mood, this psychology of obedience is the life and soul of a devotee. He lives by this. What mission, what instruction have I received? And some of, we all receive direct instructions. I know personally in my relationship with Srila Prabhupada, I can't really say Srila Prabhupada told me some personal instruction that you go here, you open this temple, you do this. I fall in the category of perhaps the large majority of devotees who receive instruction from Srila Prabhupada to chant 16 rounds called the way principles cooperate with other Vaishnavas, spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. These are generic instructions that everyone's inherited. And then there are other Vaishnavas who receive some particular instruction. You build the Mayapur. You build this temple over here. Or you go to this city and you start some preaching. Both of these instructions are very important. They fall into the category of vani. And by having faith in the generic instruction, as is being stated here, if there are any other specific instructions that come in this case from Srila Prabhupada, they may be revealed within the heart. They may be revealed to Vaishnavas through other devotees, through dreams. Everything will manifest, as it's stated here, to devotees who are very faithful. Shushupo, Shadatamascha, Pasudeva, Kavanachi. So Bhagavatam begins by explaining that devotees have to be Shadatamascha. They have to be very faithful. Without the quality of having this pure faith in the nature of the Guru Parampara, in our simple succession, then devotional service doesn't really work. Vasudeva Tavuchi, the taste for hearing the pastimes of the Lord, for chanting Hare Krishna, won't really manifest, and if the taste
doesn't manifest, then the taste for material life continues to dominate the heart. And then once again, Vande Guru. Here, Guru is being referred to in a plural sense. So, often, I was not fortunate enough to be here in class yesterday. My apologies. Our meetings have been very demanding physically and on our time. But generally, when we refer to Guru or when we hear references to Guru in Srila Prabhupada's purports, we tend to be exclusive in that consciousness. This refers to Mardiksha Guru. No, not the Chani Subhaktiksha. You have to know how to recognize who's your Guru. Krishna was not Diksha Guru. In many examples in Srimad Bhagavatam, the person who is, he's not even called Guru, he doesn't even have the appellation, but still he's given that type of respect. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not Diksha Guru. Arupa Goswami had only one Diksha disciple. We often make reference to our Bhagavad Parampara, which is not based on Diksha, but it's based on recognition of where transcendental knowledge is coming from. Who has given the greatest contribution to spreading Krishna consciousness and manifesting the teachings of Lord Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the greatest receptacle of realization of devotional service. So the recognition of spiritual master, it is also very important in order to be able to say yes, sir. So we know how to say yes, sir, to all of the individuals that we receive instruction from. And this example with Arjuna and Ashwatthama is instructive. One has to know how to be able to satisfy multiple personalities, not just one. I satisfy this one, and all the others, well, I don't care about them. We have to be able to care about them. And sometimes it may take time. So Arjuna labored over, how am I going to do this? First he took a vow. Then he went off chasing Ashwatthama along with Krishna. And this was all going on while they were following him. Finally, they caught Ashwatthama. Arjuna was in a dilemma. He was in a dilemma by then. Then he didn't kill him. He brought him all the way back. Then, who knows, all of the different things that took place, a lot of time transpired. So it may require time. Ultimately, it's not a matter of just saying yes, sir, but how do we say yes, sir? And to whom we're also saying yes, sir? And that we're not just satisfying some, so Krishna says, now you have to satisfy everyone. And Arjuna was in a bit of a dilemma. How am I going to satisfy everyone? But Krishna gave a hint. Just cut off that jewel off the top of his head. He's as good as dead without that. And then, of course, on top of that, Krishna ended up cursing Ashwatthama. And even now, Ashwatthama is said to be wandering in different parts of the world, sometimes in the Himalayas, sometimes in Vrindavan. So it requires that type of contemplation, that type of instruction. When we read this, then we need to also be a little open that it's not going to be just so black and white. We are not in the position of Parashuram, that just without thinking I follow. He was right. Obviously he was right. But he is also the empowered incarnation of the Lord. And although his empowerment came from Krishna, we can see that even that empowerment, when not kept in balance with other things, made him wrong at a certain point. When Lord Ramachandra was coming back with Sita Devi to Ayodhya, Parashuram had heard that here is this Ram, who's a great wielder of a bow, a great Kshatriya, he was there to, he had chastised the Kshatriyas. So he was giving an exclusive attention to my empowerment. My empowerment is to destroy the race of Kshatriyas. But it went to his head. This whole idea of saying yes, sir, was not kept in balance. So when he came even face to face with Lord Ramchandra, who was actually the source of his empowerment, he didn't recognize him. And when he tried to exercise his prowess against Lord Ram, then he lost out. He just lost all of his empowerment at that stage. So it's not just a matter of being a yes man. One has to also be one. Saying yes doesn't mean being a yes man. I don't know if you know. Hopefully, this word yes man is a from the West, a North American form of expression. Someone who just always says yes to whatever he's told. But here, the emphasis is yes, you say yes, but it isn't you're saying it mindlessly. You say yes, but there are other considerations to take place. Make sure you understand what you're saying yes to, because that will give you the empowerment to then act without being told, without being instructed later on. Those times will come. Srila Prabhupada gave instructions to his followers. Now Srila Prabhupada was not physically with us. He expected that learning how to follow also implies that you learn how to follow even in the absence of the instruction, or when those instructions are coming within the heart. And then also taking into consideration how those instructions balance from other great Vaishnavas, to whom we're also equally indebted, such as our father and our mother and the Brahmins and our senior Vaishnavas. All of these things need to be taken into account. We have a few minutes, and I'll just stop there and ask our dear Vaishnavas to make some comments. Or if anyone else has any comments. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Is there mobile mic ready to mic? I'll repeat it if I do.
How much appreciation of how you went back yesterday. Not a bad day. How you appreciate how you provide. I have a question.
Hare Krishna, I won't answer those. Keeping things in balance, but you might.
You gave several examples about how we get instructions and apparently contradictory instructions. And I'm wondering how you elaborate, how you deal with them. You have different authorities to supposed to say yes or to, and some they appear to be contradictory. So how do we prioritize those instructions from different sources and different gurus?
It's a very evolved right in mind question, which is quite relevant because all Vaishnavas are in this situation. Many are in this situation. I remember being in a very similar one. And either we are able to resolve it. If not, sometimes we may need to ask our authorities to resolve it amongst themselves, because I can't resolve it. My initiated spiritual master says one thing, my instructing spiritual master, temple president, tells me something a little different, then he tells something completely different, and I don't want to be in a situation, if I can't resolve it to their mutual satisfaction, then I ask them, can you please discuss this amongst yourselves, and just give me one straight instruction. And And sometimes you have to live. I remember in 1976, Joe Prabhupada came to Montreal. He was supposed to stay for some time. He came in the morning. He got a telegram. At that time, there were such things as telegrams. He got a telegram that Indira Gandhi was willing to see him. And he hopped on the plane. He got the telegram. He stayed in the tent for maybe 3 hours at the most. And on the way out, the airport, we were sitting at the airport. I used to do Sankirtan at the airport at that time. I was telling Srila Prabhupada how difficult doing Sankirtan at the airport was. So Prabhupada really floored me when he said, because they would catch us and throw us out, if it's so difficult, then you can come to India. This is what I was expecting. And don't worry, stick it out, book distribution, you go back to God. And I wasn't quite sure whether this was what it said, so I repeated, come to India. So I found out later on from Brahmananda Maharaj that because Prabhupada was, he had so much difficulty with American devotees getting visas, that he was looking for Canadians and British citizens, because they got visas and they didn't have residency. So Prabhupada was fishing to that type of thing also. Even at the expense of decreasing book distribution, he wanted devotees to. Anyway, but I went back to my GDC, I won't mention his name, and I said, such and such for Guru Prabhupada said I should go to India. When do I go? Well, that's not what Prabhupada meant. What's what Prabhupada meant? And we had a similar experience when Prabhupada sent out two telegrams to Kumar Krishna Maharaj in 1977 that anyone who wants to come, you should come to India at that time to be with Srila Prabhupada. I don't know if you had that experience, but my temple president interpreted that. But the highest service, you just continue out there and obey. That's more important. That's what Prabhupada really meant. I didn't resolve it like that, but I did follow the instructions of both my GDC and Bill Prabhupada. I can't say I didn't regret it. But somehow or another, I should have asked him, can you phone up and check with Bill Prabhupada? Would it be better? But this was actually what he really wanted to do, that they stay in Montreal or stay in Chicago. But ultimately, since we did say yes, sir, and it was issue of beheading anyone, possibly the benefit of the result was there. Anyway, I diverge from the answer. If we can't, then ask them to resolve it amongst themselves. Better not to take choice between the rules. You have to be elevated to be able to do that. As for instance, Pakistan, but Saraswati Thakur was when he completely rejected Bhakti and Old Thakur's Diksha Guru. He just walked away. He was down there, Bhakti and Old Thakur received him, and Bhakti sent the service of Thakur. He just walked out, which nowadays is not such a big thing when the child walks out. When the Guru comes in, more than 100 years ago, that's really disregarding someone. So he, in other words, he was saying, I don't think, what to speak of the con, who do you think you are putting your foot on my father's head? So, unless you're of such exalted stature, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Parashurama, we should really consider and find resolution to the instructions. Anyway, it's 7 o'clock and we're about to have